The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Anything goes wrong with his show, it's his fault. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, that is Desert Financial Credit Union, and we do appreciate their support. Charles Davis is going to be with us. I love Charles Davis. I think he does great work on the NFL Network and at CBS Sports. Charles is one of those people that way back in the day when we first started doing this, back in 2011, Eric Sorensen found. And whenever Charles comes on, he tells me something I don't know, which I'm not a know-it-all by any stretch of the imagination, but I hate it when guests just come on and state the obvious and you do 10 minutes and just, ugh. He is not one of those. I don't know if you saw how in-depth Charles was on the Cardinals and their draft and also the discussion that the NFL Network had on the drop by Spencer Rattler, of Spencer Rattler, I should say. I want to talk to Charles about that. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, every Monday, one of the best in the business, one of the leading voices in college sports. John Wilner will be with us. He's actually coming to the Valley this Wednesday at a top secret location. We're going to break bread. And I'm sure John and I will talk a little bit about, well, everything at All With Something University. The dissolving of the Pac-12, the future NFL drafts, and all sorts of stuff. That'll be with John Wilner. Where do you start on a weekend like this? I was telling my wife yesterday, and what a great weekend it was. Just everywhere there was something that was happening. It was Friday, Thursday was the draft, and Friday it was the Suns, and spring football games. Jordan Hamm from our team was at both the game in Tempe on Friday night, and Saturday night he was in Tucson. You can see his content over the website. Jordy worked his ass off this weekend. The draft I went over to along with Eliav on Friday and Saturday. And then last night was the Suns. I think starting with the Suns because it's freshest. But I don't know about you. I'm glad this season is behind us. I am. I found this year to be tedious and painstaking. Part of it is the rah-rah, cheer-cheer, everything is great crowd that's out there, even some in our industry. Everything's great. Everything's awesome. Everything's amazing. Our Suns, it's the ref's fault and all that BS. There's way too much of it. We got to get tougher in this town. I don't mean to be like meanies, but the Let's Go Suns chants got to go. Like, I love the other night they were chanting Fire Vogel. Okay. It can't be this nice place like we've seen through the years. The Suns are easy. It's easy to go to the Suns because people there are very nice and hospitable. They're the nicest organization in town, in my opinion, through the years. Not besmirching anybody else, just... You walk there and there's no issues, there's no problems. It's what everybody's friendly. Security guards are happy to be there. It's not always the case. Not every elevator operator is happy where I'm out at an NFL game or at a baseball game or, then there's just people in the organization that they aren't seeking you out to talk about how things are not good. So I think if we're talking about the Suns and what happened, and how they get eliminated in the fashion that happened against Minnesota, I believe you could see this coming if you would not have the purple and orange glasses on. I really do. Minnesota was a lot bigger, younger, more physical, more athletic, had a deeper bench, The Suns on the other side of the street are you're built around an aging superstar who's really good still in Kevin Durant, but he's playing at the power forward position. He is not a power forward. You're hoping to get production out of Bradley Beal because you have this big contract that you've signed him to and he didn't produce and he has a no trade clause and you can't get out from under this. Devin Booker, I've said it. Think about this. Give me the last time a player started and finished his career or her career with the same team. It doesn't happen very often. Diana Taurasi is probably going to do it with the Mercury. But it doesn't happen very often in any sport. Tom Brady can finish in creamsicle Tampa Bay uniform. Come on. So that's just how it goes in sports. There comes a point where contract is too big, or a player may look at it and say, look, I get passed over for the NBA All-Star game every bleeping year because I'm in Phoenix. This isn't ripping where we are. It's just a fact. If you're in LA or you're in New York, NBA Entertainment's going to make a lot bigger deal out of you than they are in Phoenix. It's like Anthony Edwards is terrific. He's stuck in Minnesota in terms of the national stuff. And so this organization, this just thud of them falling apart and having a first round elimination, let's not forget, last year against New Orleans, it was a struggle in the first round. It's not like this has been smooth. Well, it's DeAndre Ayton's fault that we didn't get it. So, okay, DeAndre gets shipped off to Portland. How did that work out? They didn't have the beef inside to bang around with Minnesota. They certainly didn't have anybody to match up with Anthony Edwards. Nobody. And they didn't have a point guard. Do you think Cam Payne or Chris Paul could have helped out just a little bit? And so the angst and anger in the community over the Suns being eliminated in the first round and just another year of being let down. I don't like it when people go on social media and say, we can't have nice things here in Phoenix. Ha, ha, ha. No, that's not how it goes. That's not how it goes. It's great to have the pro sports franchises. It sucked to lose the Coyotes a couple of weeks ago. It's not good. But I've been here since 1993. And when the Suns are relevant, the sports market is a buzz. The Suns have been relevant in terms of they've got a big name and they've got a new owner that's putting some money into the product. Feels like it's a little stale. Feels like the only way to get out of the mess that they're in is if they did decide to trade Kevin Durant, or, and I'm saying they should, if they were open to the idea of trading Devin Booker. And you may be like, oh, there's no way that'll happen. Again, let me go back. Nobody starts and finishes with the same team. This team next year, you can change coaches, but they're really stuck. They're hamstrung from a salary cap standpoint. Fans don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear about things like the second apron. That doesn't make sense. Apron, that's something you wear in the kitchen. No, that's part of the NBA salary cap. That's how they control costs. And the Suns and the second apron are a bad combination right now because they have so much money tied up. And so, you know, you look at it and say, okay, how do we get out of this? Because is this team set up for a long extended playoff run? You can make the playoffs with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Brad. You can fire the coach, but your roster is still not in great shape. It's not. And so as I'm looking at this, I want a team that's set up for a long run. Minnesota is set up for a long run. Oklahoma City is set up for a long run. The Phoenix Suns are one of these aging teams. And so, you know, if they decide Durant didn't work out in Phoenix, or if Kevin says, I want out of here, I want to go somewhere else where I'm being used the right way, then maybe, just maybe, you can get this thing flipped around. But I don't see this happening in the next couple of years. I just don't. Save the tape, Jared. If I decide, if I'm proven wrong, which has happened before, but you just have to look at it objectively. Forget about the rah-rah purple and orange and all that stuff. Objectively, they're not even close to where Minnesota is in terms of size, athleticism, star power. You can market it, but come on, Kevin Durant's on the back end. Bradley Beal, superstar, untradeable contract. So that's where we are with the Suns today. I have not said this very often through the years I've been here. I'm actually looking forward to the Cardinal season. Oh, well, you're not a fan. You should be a fan. No, I shouldn't be a fan. That's not my job. Not my job. When things are good, they're good. When things are bad, they're bad. The Cardinals have had the worst record in the NFL the last 2 years. And before that, there's been nothing very good except going to the Super Bowl all the way back in 2009. So I'm not going to sit here and cheerlead all day long. Hey, things are great. And the team's 4-12 and stinks. I liked what they did in the draft. I think they're a playoff team this year. They're a fringe playoff team. Let me put it that way. Last year, they won four games. Okay. Remember, Josh Dobbs started the season quarterback. Kyler Murray wasn't even around. And they lost some close games last year. They lost four games by 7 points or less. All right. Those four with the four wins equals eight. Yeah, they got their heads kicked in several times because their roster wasn't very good, but I believe they really upgraded their roster. And just through another year of maturity, another year of time and doing their thing. So when they take Marvin Harrison Jr., as they did, and they address needs across the board as they did, doesn't matter what draft nicks are saying, oh, the Cardinals get an A. Fine. Can you coach them up? Can you get players that come in and are there that are sharp? They're not just there saying, man, I want a payday, and that's it. They went big brand. Did you notice? When you take four players from the Big Ten, three players from the ACC, the SEC, that's going big brand. And that's what Monty Austin Ford did. It was great. So, yeah, I'm big on where they are. I laugh at the hypocritical side of the NFL. Roger Goodell saying, I hate preseason football. Like, I've been sitting here screaming at the top of my lungs what a ripoff it is for you fans through the years to go to that garbage in August. Oh, well, you shouldn't talk about our product that way, I get from the NFL defenders. Well, your commissioner just said, I hate preseason football. Of course, he said, we want to get to 18 games. Oh, okay, how's the players union feel about that? I am on the players' side. You can tell the product early in the season isn't great. Like here in Phoenix, because the Suns are done and we're just into the first week of May, we got a long summer ahead of us. There's no more hockey team. The basketball team's not playing. The baseball team's had a bunch of injuries. The college football teams in our state, the one in Tucson is interesting. The one in Tempe, I believe, is somewhat interesting. I like what their coach is doing. But there's nothing here to really look forward to until you start the NFL training camps, which is at the end of July. And I think the interest in what the Cardinals are doing, there's always interest in the NFL. It's just the Cardinals are so far down the food chain in Phoenix in the sports market. They are. They like to tell everybody they're the greatest. They're not. It's the Suns by a mile and a half. Well, the Suns are off the grid. Kyler's back. Interesting story this year. I think it's a make or break year for Kyler Murray. So yeah, I like where the Cardinals are. I'm very much looking forward to the start of this football season. Bobby Hurley did something interesting today. He signed a 16-year-old, Jade Quarantine, who's going to be a two-year college player because he's only 16 years of age. He is rated one of the top players, if not the top center in the nation. Bobby gets him here. Bobby said over the weekend, he's thinking about, I forget who had this story. I think it was Jeff Goodman, that Bobby is thinking about taking his life story and trying to monetize it as a way to get NIL to come in. Well, then he turns around and gets one of the top players in the nation with NIL in the middle of it. This player had committed to be at Kentucky with John Calipari. Then decommits when Calipari leaves, doesn't go to Arkansas. Was it NIL related? I don't know. That buzz is out there this morning. Just before I came on the air, talked to some people about it. That's a big get. Obviously a big get. Mercury Open training camp over the weekend in San Diego. The Diamondbacks have the Dodgers in town tonight, so we're going to hear beat LA all day long, which is the way it should be. Brandon Pfaadt yesterday looked great, struck out 11. I watched some of that. They took out Seattle. They come home, they're 4.5 back of the Dodgers. 4.5 back of the Dodgers. They have the Dodgers and Padres this week at home. Let's see where things land. Charles Davis is next with the NFL Network and CBS Sports, and then John Wilner. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's shift gears away from the Suns to something more positive. I felt like the Arizona Cardinals over the last year and a half with Monty Austin Fort and Jonathan Gannon have really started to turn the corner. And if you look at last year with Josh Dobbs and Kyle Murray not there, this team lost some games early that were close. And with what they did in the draft, I feel like they're a playoff team on the periphery. They're not there yet. Charles Davis is somebody that we've had on through the years who I love and respect a great deal for his insight. And just his demeanor, it's very calm. It's not over the top, like, this is the greatest thing ever. That's what I like about you. CBS Sports, NFL Network. So I want to get into the Cardinals in a minute. Just how are you? What do you think of the draft? Let's start there.
Brad, it's so great to see you.
I'm pumped up. Excited.
It is great to talk with you again. Great to see you via Zoom. Let's start with Detroit because they deserve major league kudos for this draft. Conducted it in exemplary fashion. I was fortunate enough to be there and MC the official announcement that they were getting the draft. Of course, we all knew, right? Word had gotten out Detroit was getting it in 2024. But this was April, I believe, of 2022. I'm the official MC of it. On stage with me to make the announcement, of course, Commissioner Goodell. Then you have Governor Gretchen Whitmer, her lieutenant governor, the mayor of Detroit, the owner of the Lions. Mrs. Ford was in the audience. Her daughter, Sheila Hamp, who's running the Lions, she was on stage. I remember going, this is a big deal. Now, everybody turns out for the big announcement, so maybe it's not such a big deal that they were all there, but each person, after we got done, off mic, all that stuff, you know how it is, Brad, when, you know, people come to town, they want to really get something. Hey, Brad, can we talk for a minute here?
Yeah.
All of them said to me the same thing individually. Okay, you've worked a number of these, right? Yes. Which ones had the biggest attendance since they've started the road show? And I was like, Nashville. And they're like, how many? I said, about 600,000 over 3 days. Yeah, we can get that number. Everyone. 775,000 was the final number I heard when I came out of Detroit. Phenomenal. 275,000 on Thursday night, on opening night. I just wanted to give credit to Detroit, credit to the Lions organization, credit to the people in Detroit, the city, the state of Michigan, the whole deal. They put it on, and you've heard of no major incidents. And that's been the best part, Brad, about this roadshow with the draft, is everywhere you go, people rib each other, right?
Sure.
All the teams have rivalries.
Yeah.
Every time Green Bay's pick came up, the booing was vociferous, okay? But everyone did it, and at the end, they hugged it out, smiled, and went on, okay? I know there were some incidents, and you can't have that big a crowd not have something, but nothing of major proportions, and we haven't had that in any of the drafts. So Detroit continues the tradition. They've established a new benchmark. It was wonderful. As for the draft itself, the true draft?
Yeah.
You mentioned Monty Austin-Fort, and when we went into this, he was the one I thought might have the eye shade on, and the sleeves rolled up because it was going to be trader time, right? He was kind of the first pressure point we kind of felt might come into play because we all suspected three quarterbacks off the top. I mean, nothing's a lock, but certainly felt like we were headed that direction. Pick four was where it came down. Cardinals, could they possibly get out, add more to their roster, more picks? Made sense.
Yep.
I know Joe Ortiz sitting at five with the Chargers was sitting there going, I know your move first, Monty, but I might be in the same position as well because they were cap strapped. And as it turned out, neither one of them did it. They both stuck and picked. The Giants stuck and picked. We got the seven stick and pick. Eight became the one where the first surprise came out. And that, of course, was the quarterback. Because no one saw a quarterback coming with the Falcons, and Michael Penix Jr. went there. But it was interesting because 2 years now from Monty Austin-Fort, I think two really, really good drafts right out of the gate for the GM.
He's come here and obviously has turned the culture over. They had the worst record in the league the last couple of years, but you have injury, you have just things that didn't work out. Previous regime moves on, and I'm looking forward in trajectory of where they are. The fourth pick. So you agreed with him there. You can make the argument he could have traded out, sure. But just when you see Marvin Harrison Jr., what do you see, Charles?
Well, part of, you know, before I even get to him, real quick, the reason I agreed so much with him staying is because he had a plethora of picks still to come.
Right.
There were other places to wheel and deal if you wanted to. That made sense. But at a certain point, wheeling and dealing is one thing. Accumulating what you think is exceptional talent that you're going to put on the field and put in your uniforms a whole nother one. Because wheeling and dealing looks wonderful. And in a lot of cases, it's the right move. But at the end of the day, when you wheel and deal, typically you haven't picked anyone. Someone else is picking people. Now, have you bypassed on great players? Have you done? You know how it goes, Brad. Once you start wheeling and dealing, it sounds great. I've accumulated all this, but all those have to hit. And guess what? They're probably not the same people that you expected to pick if you stuck. Turning down Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, would have been a wrong move, because I saw them play one time last year. Myself, Ian Eagle, Evan Washburn, our crew. It was the San Francisco game late in the year in Arizona. And twice they played San Francisco tough. The final scores, I think, were somewhat deceiving, how it turned out. And this one was no different. They played them tough. In fact, Brad, as you remember, they ran the ball so well that day that it opened up a lot of questions about San Francisco. And Detroit exploited that in the playoffs and then quit doing it. Remember? First half, they just ran them silly.
Sure, sure.
In the second half, they got away from it. San Francisco makes a comeback and beats them. In a lot of ways, I think Arizona offered a blueprint that day. The other part was how hard they played. Okay, I'm watching this team with not a ton of talent, play them hard, play them tough. And last but not least, here was the kicker. Kyler Murray's back, throwing the football. He doesn't really have anyone to throw the ball to. They were 31st or 32nd in wide receiver yards last year. That's a screaming need. And here's the best receiver in the draft staring you at the face at four. I have plenty of picks later. I thought it was great discipline by Monty to say, hold on a second. I got to get a good player, and I'm going to get him right here. You guys worry about it later.
It's interesting. We're talking with Charles Davis for a couple of minutes, CBS Sports, NFL Network. It's interesting, as I was sitting there watching it, and I got here in 93. I came from San Diego. Bobby Bethard was fortunate to mentor me when I was doing this back in the day and hosting stuff with the Chargers. Billy Devaney, Marty Herney, some really good football minds. And Bobby was about trading back. But at some point, you do have to pull the trigger. And as I've sat here and watched this organization the last couple of years, it's trade back. Stockpile your capital. Now go use it. Yep. The fan base has got to trust you. You only have a limited window here with Kyler. At some point, there's going to be is he the right guy here? And I still believe that he is. We're in that year, I think. I think we're probably in that year. Is this it or is it not it? And then you have a running back in James Conner, and you have a tight end in McBride who came on last year, Dortch. There's some really nice pieces that they put together here. And so as I'm looking at their draft top to bottom then, Charles, it's Monty went the tact of big brands this year. Yeah, he traded back. And sure, there's a player from Rutgers in their draft that fans may say, but still, four Big Ten players. Three ACC, he wasn't messing around. And sometimes you can go find that hidden gem. I'm not demeaning those picks. But he just decided this year was a big brand draft from my view.
I'm with you on that one. And also part of that big brand draft is we've accumulated some talent already. Those kids played really hard for us.
They did.
Kids who understand the big stage and have played on it and dealt with it. Although I think we're getting to that point now, Brad, and this is one of my little pet theories, that these kids are on a bigger stage now at the age of 12.
Sure.
Yep. Than I ever thought about before I got to college, because social media has narrowed the world. So when they go to these camps and they do things, they create friends. You and I created pen pals, and you and I both know that didn't last very long, right? You might wrote one, maybe two letters, and off it goes, right?
Yeah.
But then immediate contact and stay in contact and the whole deal. When they're talking about going to college, they're trying to assemble like we've seen in the NBA, right? Hey, I'm the quarterback. Come play with me. Gets his wide receivers, gets his running. You know how it works. These kids all know each other. They play games that are on television. I thought one county over was a big game when I was in high school. These kids get on planes and fly and go play. They're ready for all this stuff in bigger ways. And then when you put them in the stage, as you said, brand name schools that play on TV all the time and are in big games week in and week out. Look, I pulled out my notes because I'm not smart enough to take it all in about all
these. Yeah, sure.
Harrison, as we said, tremendous pick, best receiver in the draft. Is it a big a gap as maybe Brock Bowers, top tight end versus number two? No, because Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, those guys, terrific players. But I still think Harrison's the best one. I'm glad they grabbed him. Darius Robinson was interesting from Missouri because He fits what I think Nick Rollins likes to do on defense, being able to move some people around, being able to capitalize on matchups. Is he a twitchy guy off the edge all the time? Not in my estimation. Can he beat people? Sure. But he's not the guy that I'm going to say, I'm going to leave him on the edge. He's getting me double-digit sacks. I never saw that with him. But when I watched him work inside in those sub packages and work over guards, now I got something going. That's where he becomes a better football player. And Nick Rollins is going to make sure he takes full advantage of that. Brand name, by the way, Missouri, which had a great season last year in the SEC, beat Ohio State in the big bowl game. Max Milton, Malachi Max Milton from Rutgers. All right. Corner, bloodlines we talk about. It came into play a little bit. His brother Bo was an undrafted free agent. He's playing in Green Bay as a receiver and has made the league. Malachi, tough, hard-nosed kid. Had his struggles in the Big Ten at times with especially some kid named Harrison. But then again, who didn't, right? But he runs really well. He's a tough, physical, hard-nosed guy. I think he adds to it as well. Trey Benson, the running back from Florida State. In any other draft, Brad, he's not a third rounder. He goes at least in the second. I get Breece Hall vibes off of him. A little bit of patience, cut, go. And when he goes big and had big year for Florida State last year. Isaiah Adams is a blocker at Illinois. Tip Riman is one of the more interesting kids for me, the tight end out of Illinois, because you remember the combine? Did you get to see the tight ends at the combine, Brad?
I did.
Hey, you remember when they bring out the blocking sled? Most of them block it, and it's like one step, and then the thing rises.
Yeah.
Unless you flat back, as we call it, and stay down low and move it forward, that thing's going to stick and go up in the air. And it looks cool to raise it up like that, but you're really not moving it. Tip Riman flat backed that thing and took it 10 yards just in a straight line. Whoa. And he's 270 something pounds already. If I were him, I'd be nervous about them wanting to make me a left tackle, okay? Because he's got that. But my comp for him, you remember Lee Smith, played forever in the league at tight end, big, strong, physical kid. Actually played in college with his dad, Daryl. This is who Tip Riman is. He's going to beat the heck out of you at the line of scrimmage, point of attack. And the way they want to run the football, he fits in really, really well. Elijah Jones from Boston College, a defensive back. Taylor Demerson from Texas Tech. This is what you're talking about, Brad. All these names are
Big
ACC.
brands,
10, 12, Xavier Thomas in the fifth round, a linebacker who can run. Christian Jones, a tackle from Texas, lasted longer than I thought. I think he can play much more of a right tackle, I think, than any other position, but he might possibly go in at guard. So I will stop there on all of those kids, but I go back to Nick Caserio in Houston was having better drafts than we knew because they were changing head coaches. They were always starting over. And then last year, they hit the right head coach. And guess what? It all came to fruition. It wasn't just last year's draft by Nick Caserio. Look at all the pieces that he'd put in place already. And now they could flourish. I think that Monty Ossenfor, only in his second year, has started that process. And the way Jonathan Gannon, Drew Petzig, the offensive coordinator, Nick Rollins, the defense coordinator, the way they've implemented their schemes, you can see already this thing is starting to take root. And I'm with you. Are they a playoff team? Tough to say it right now. Are they playoff adjacent? I think the
Yeah,
answer is yes, especially
sure.
with you're getting a full year.
Yeah, I mean, you see 8 wins. You can see 8 wins without the schedule in front of us. Before I get you out of here, Spencer Rattler is a local kid. A lot of controversy about Spencer lasting so long. We saw the documentary that was referred to, Ian Rappaport referred to. We saw it when it came out, and I was shaking my head like, this is not good. What was your read on the Spencer Rattler dropping in the draft and ending up at New Orleans?
Surprised that he lasted as long as he did, Brad, but not surprised that he lasted. Here's why. Every year we go into this about what quarterbacks are going to go early and how many times have we had that, and then there's a gap, especially if you roll six out in the first round.
Right.
It happens
Right.
all the time, but it doesn't happen all the time. You get six in the first round. A couple years ago, Kenny Pickett went in the first round, but remember all the smoke we had going? Could Desmond Ridder be a first rounder? Could Malik Willis be the first quarterback off the board? You see, remember that one?
Every year. Yep.
Pickett went to Pittsburgh in the 20s, early 20s, and then we didn't have another quarterback picked till the third round. Okay. Last year, Will Levis By the time we started to pro by the time we got to Thursday night, the smoke was just swirling that Will Levis was a top five quarterback. He didn't go till the next day. He got his call back home because he left, took a flight home, and was home and got the phone call as opposed to being there on the stage. What a disappointing night for him. But it probably worked out better in a lot of ways because he's the starting quarterback in Tennessee right here, right now. He was able to get the job. This is what happens with these things. And once we saw six come out, one of the few times in my life I've gotten something right, we started the show, Brad, and I said, guys, I feel very strong. We're not going to see a quarterback in the second round. We'll probably start again in the third. We had six come off the board. I think there's going to be a gap. There was. Did I expect it to last as long as it did before Spencer Rattler came off? Not at all. Not at all. But here's the one thing to keep in mind. New Orleans, who took Spencer Rattler, had gone up and really talked to Monty, Joe Ortiz, all the people up top about trying to get into the top 10 to get a quarterback. So when they didn't get the one that they wanted, they chose to sit back and wait. And now they got a guy they view as a developmental guy who has the potential to be a starter, but they got him at a price much better than having to go up there early and get him. But New Orleans was very interested in a quarterback. I think the surprise for all of us is that the Raiders didn't take him. At some point, you know, because we all thought that's where he was going to go. Last thing, the Netflix thing did him no favors. We know that. I met the young man a few summers ago at a camp. It's actually the Manning Passing Academy. I wouldn't figure he'd know me from Adam. I don't walk around with the idea everybody knows me, Brad. I'm not of that ilk.
It's never been you.
But I'm there, standing there, and this young man rolls up to me, sticks his hand out, firm handshake, looks me in the eye, and said, "Mr. Davis, I just want to introduce myself. My name is Spencer Rattler. I'm playing at South Carolina now. Very nice to meet you, Spencer. How are you?" We started talking. We struck up a relationship. But I don't want to fool anyone. We're not talking every day. We're not talking every week. I'm not his mentor. I'm not his anything. But I watched him the entire week from that handshake because I saw the Netflix program. Okay. And there were coaches there that went, "Oh, that kid, right?" I watched him the entire week. This was a different, not Netflix Spencer Rattler. I saw him doing the right things. I saw him interacting because, you know, at the camp, you are also a counselor. And so you have kids. And these kids, they bought into him hard. And he was buying into them. He was doing everything. There's a reason he was a five-star player, Brad. You saw it.
Yep, we did.
It didn't work at Oklahoma. But boy, did he battle through and play well at South Carolina. I remember him wrecking my Tennessee Volunteers two seasons ago. This kid's got talent. I believe that the so-called makeover, whatever we want to call it, is real. I believe in this young man. I'm rooting for him because let me just say it as plainly as I can. If anyone had had a camera on me at 17, I don't know how well I would have come off either. This is how it works. It's called maturity and growth. Give people opportunities. And this kid's been through some bumps now. It wasn't all the charm life when he was five-star coming out. Had the issues coming out of high school. He ends up losing the job at Oklahoma. He has to go to South Carolina, humble himself, and start over again. And boy, he did all of those things. So I believe it's real, and I'm really, really rooting for this young man.
I think it's, and I am too, because I saw it up here close. I think it's one of those that you do show young kids, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't do this. Don't do this.
Right? Brad, you and I are probably similar vintage, right? Remember when we were in school and they started showing us, what was it, the Scared Straight? Remember that?
Yeah, sure. Red paint. Red paint was the driving deal. Don't, this is how you don't drive. This is red paint, which was blood on the road.
Right?
Scared us.
And you, I mean, we walked, I remember walking around school like this forever in my little suburban area in New York. Scared Straight wasn't even a possibility where I was.
Yeah.
Watching it, I mean, there were more yes sirs and no sirs in school for the next year across the country after that series came out. But you're exactly right. You show them, is this how you want to be? Because, you know, we as parents and we as adults and so-called mentors, that's all we're doing. Is this how you really want to come off? And the hard part is it doesn't bother the youngsters the way it bothers us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they live their life on stage. And what we think is held against you, for them, that's just Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets difficult. you know, because older people like us are going to judge them in a different light. Colleges, when you're going to school, people who are employing you, all those other things. We still see those horror stories. These kids don't. And that's what makes it more and more difficult when you're doing these types of things.
I appreciate all your time and insight as always. It's good stuff to chop it up with you, Charles. Best of luck to you and safe travels. Thanks. All right, now that the draft is behind us and spring football games are behind us, the Pac-12 is almost behind us. That means John Wilner has some splaining to do. Some splaining. Like, what are you going to do now? The great John Wilner with us for a few minutes. I only ask this because we've kind of addressed this, but I'm getting fans saying, okay, all these graphics you have with Pac-12 or Pac-12 this, but when does that stop? When does it go away? Because they're done. So I'm asking you, as the founder of Wilner Hotline, where are we at, John?
Well, we're switching to Wilner Hotline from Pac-12 Hotline. Seems to make the most sense, and that's my Twitter X handle. So hopefully that transition will be pretty smooth on the production and design side. The timing is up in the air. You know, the schools aren't leaving until August 2nd.
What?
That's the date that was laid out in the mediated settlement between the 10 departing schools and the two remaining schools. So the Pac-12, it will exist with 12 schools through 11:59 p.m. on August 1st, which, put another way, is only like 3.5 weeks from the start of the season.
Right.
So the timing of our switch is that I got to figure that piece out. We may do it ahead of time before the Pac-12 is kind of ceases to exist. We also may just wait until then. I'm not sure, but I thought it would be July 1st, the start of the fiscal year. That is not the case. August 2nd is the first day the Arizona schools will be in the Big 12.
So why is that, John? What happened here?
I don't know. You
Associate
well, I
this.
th I can only guess. It was hammered out as part of the settlement. It coincides with the expiration of the Pac-12's grant of rights agreement. Right, the grant of rights deal is what the schools sign that binds their media rights to the conference. The conferences then turn around and sell those rights to the TV networks. For whatever reason, 12 years ago, Larry Scott signed a 12-year deal with Fox and ESPN, and all those deals with the Pac-12 networks, you know, Comcast and Dish, and the deal expired on August 1st. Of 2024. Nobody knows why it didn't expire on July 1st, but it so the departure of the 10 schools coincides with the expiration of the grant of rights deal, not the close of the fiscal year. That's the Pac-12 for you. So
So,
I believe teams are going to be starting training camp basically
as
as still members of the Pac, of the Pac-12.
God, what happens
Yep.
first? What happens first? The dissolving of the Pac-12 or ASU getting an athletic director? Where do you put your money, John? Where? I think today is day 162 with these guys, still not without an AD. So, no, I don't.
Yeah, well, Michael Crow does things a little bit differently.
A little
And
bit,
this
a
is
little bit.
another example. Another example of it. I saw some reports out of Phoenix that the plan to promote Graham Rossini, which had kind of been that had been the whisper for months,
Been out there forever, yeah.
maybe delayed because of some of the issues they're having. You know, why would you promote somebody from the staff that and the tenure that had so much trouble? Why not bring in a new face and restart, which is what Arizona did with Desiree Reed-Francois. I don't know. We'll see what Crow does and what the regents are okay with. But I would expect that they will have not only will ASU have an AD. I'm going out on a line here,
Oh, yeah.
out on
All
the
right.
edge.
I'm going to hold
Not
it
only will they have an AD before they
to
join the Big 12, I believe they will have an AD before the end of the fiscal year. So I'm saying June 30th, they'll have an AD by then.
And they had this many draft picks. This many. Big zero.
Well, again,
Zero.
that's decisions that, you know, it's the downstream effect of terrible decisions, right? And that's yet another example. Kenny Dillingham deserves a raise. I wrote that the other day.
I saw that. I saw you wrote that.
Everything he has put in, I don't care that he didn't, you know, he had a sub-500 record and has been there 1 year. The guy deserves a raise. Think about all the stuff that he's been hit with since he got there. Of course, the main thing being the bowl ban, but just all the stuff that has, you know, emanated from the decisions made by Ray Anderson and Herm Edwards and Michael Crow. I mean, it's just, they're lucky that he bleeds, you know, red and gold, because I don't know if anybody else will be putting up with this.
Well, but here's the thing on that, John. And I didn't mean to go down this path today, but now you have me all wound up. Kenny's
all
been
good.
Kenny's been here. Okay. Kenny's been here. What is it? He's been here about 15 months. About 19 months. Okay. So I had him on like at the 100-day mark, said, what have you learned here that you didn't know coming in? He holds up a water bottle. He said that it takes 3 signatures to get a water bottle approved. Okay.
Yeah.
From people who don't even work here anymore. And, you know, it was just, and that's how it is. The maddening part of it is the stuff that is out, that's not even half of what isn't out. There's just so much stuff behind the scenes that shows incompetence at every single level. And so I understand why some of these big cigars, it's taken forever. Like, big cigars, would you guys please stop with the forks up, go Devils, just because you went to college there? This place is a bleep show. It's been a bleep show. And you need a big broom just to sweep everybody out and start over. We've gone through this. But to Kenny's point, you know, Kenny says he wants to be here forever. John, I think if he wins 6 or 7 games here, his agent would be criminal for his agent not to say, hey, you know, there's better gigs out there.
Could be. We'll see. I will be very curious to see how he responds once he gets this thing turned around. And you're right. And it's not just football, right? I mean, Desert Financial Arena, that you know, it's like the old as Coliseum of Rome, right? I mean, And here's the thing that I think fans may not realize, right? Desert Financial was opened in 1974, the same year that ASU opened their baseball stadium. They moved out of the baseball stadium 10 years ago because it was too old, right? Packard Stadium, they moved out a decade ago, but they're still playing basketball. Look,
Elvis Presley played in that building. Yeah, there's still gum under the seats from the night that Elvis was in the building. Come on.
This gets back to something that is not talked about enough in college athletics. It is all about alignment and having a president or chancellor who cares about athletics, recognizes the importance of athletics, is engaged in athletics, knows what they don't know, so they delegate properly, but they support. You know, Michael Crow, and I've said this before, it is an amazing dichotomy. He's done so much good for the university and so much bad for athletics. And it's incredible that the same results come from one person.
Right, right. John is going to be appearing here in the Valley. He's going to be appearing at the Fiesta Summit. Was known as a frolic back in the day. I had some people at the Fiesta Bowl that corrected me because that is related to the John Junker days, which
yes,
John's a good friend. So I'm not going to sit here and badmouth him. Mistakes happen. So you're coming here on Wednesday. What are you going to be doing here in the Valley on Wednesday? You're not going to have dinner with Michael Crow, it sounds like.
No, not in the plans. I'm going to be attending so it's not just the Fiesta Summit. That starts Thursday, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there are meetings. The Mountain West Conference, the Big 12 Conference are having important meetings with coaches, athletic directors, commissioners. I'm there, you know, to talk to folks in the Big 12, because the Arizona schools, Utah, Colorado, going in the Big 12, our coverage is going to expand. We're going to be covering the Big 12, just like we covered the Pac-12 and the issues that are important to the fans and the schools. So I'm coming in to meet with a bunch of folks from the Big 12 and also attend a seminar on college football with a bunch of folks who are, you know, quote unquote, college football insiders from the schools and the conferences. So it should be good. Looking forward to it.
Look at you.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Hey, the hotline covers the issues that matter to the schools, and it doesn't matter which conference they're in.
No, I like that. The thing is, how much of this conversation is, look, this is 2024, but in 2026, you're going to be in the Mountain West anyways. So what I'm saying is, you can have all these meetings and summits about the new conference here, the new conference there. John, I think every year we're going to have some discussion about, can you believe this conference blew up, or this conference added, or this conference isn't happy? To think that the ACC is just set in cement. No, they're not. They're in quicksand, actually.
They are in quicksand.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, you're right. But that's a big part of the reason that the hotline is going to be there to talk to folks on the Big 12. And we're going to go meet up with Big Ten folks in a few months, because it's all interconnected, and it's everything affects everything. What the SEC and Big Ten are doing with their advisory committee, that's going to affect the other conferences. What's going on in the ACC with the legal fight, that's going to affect the other conferences. And yeah, we're going to get more and more evolution of this whole thing. I mean, who knows? Florida State and Clemson have until, I believe it is either August 15th or August 20th, to commit to the ACC for the 2025 football season. So we may know in 3 or 4 months if those schools are in the ACC next year.
Sure, sure. And then there'll be another conference, and it's all going towards the big fish being the Big Ten and the SEC just gobbling up everybody, and then figuring out the media deal, and then figuring out which athletic departments are saying, yeah, we can't compete here. We're going to go to Group of Five, and we'll have our own little playoff, and people will make fun of us, and there'll be like 30, 40 schools up here in this big level. That's where it's going, and it's just, when will it be there, right? I'm not overstating this.
No, you're not. When will it be there? It could be there 2 years. It could take 6 or 8. Nobody quite knows. And who's going to be in that top tier, right? Are the Arizona schools going to be in the top tier? Colorado, Utah? I don't know. I happen to think the top tier is only going to be 30, 35 schools, because I don't think it's worth it to Fox and ESPN to have more than that in there. Why do they need to pay for, you know, Arizona against UCF if they don't have to, right? So to me, it's just even some of the schools that are in the Big Ten and the SEC aren't going to make the final cut for this Super League. But we'll see. It's all... The speed of change is increasing exponentially. Everything that's happened in the last few years is going to look like amateur hour to compare to what happens in the next 2 or 3.
Could you stay in a suit? This may be way out there. It's early in the morning. All I have in here is coffee, just so you know, I'm not drinking heavy. Could you have a super conference that is football specific, but then have a super conference that is basketball specific? So, like, Notre Dame's over in the ACC, right? Indiana football, not good. Nobody cares. Indiana basketball, completely different argument. Purdue football, they get their heads kicked in for the most part. Purdue basketball, we just saw. So my point is, U of A football has been okay. Okay? They're on a nice trajectory. U of A basketball, that's a brand that you want. Arizona State, yeah, I think, would be in a tough spot if there was something like this. But do you understand what I'm saying, that maybe you have super conferences based on the sport?
Possibly. I haven't heard that there are, you know, thoughts about a basketball super conference. To me, when I hear the folks talk about what might happen, men's basketball, women's basketball are together with the Olympic sports. It is only football that is separated out, because football is so different with the finances, with the numbers, with the resources involved, with the revenue that's generated. But certainly men's basketball is going to play a role in how the whole thing ends up looking. But I don't know that there would be, I think men's basketball would be kind of regionalized with women's basketball and the other Olympic sports. And then you just have 30, 40 schools playing basically a mini NFL.
It's like the Bobby Hurley story that came out over the weekend. Did you see that one? Bobby Hurley.
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about using his life story as a way to generate revenue for NIL. Like, that's how I read it. Like, that's pretty smart.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea.
If that's what it's going to take, and if that's how in depth he is to be at ASU, it's like, you know what? Enough of this trying to get people to commit. I'll just go do it myself, because I can bet on me. And and there'll be other coaches that will help him out, specifically his brother, I would think. The NFL draft is finished up.
Absolutely.
So So the NFL draft, do you have any takeaways from the Pac-12 and how that went? One, two, look ahead to 2025 and Pac-12 players, because it looks like Colorado's going to have a couple next year near the top. But what did you make of the draft? What do you look at in 2025 from a Pac-12 perspective?
Yeah, well, a couple things stand out. One is the Pac-12 set a record for the most picks it's produced in the era of the 7-round draft. That started 30 years ago. Previous record, 39 picks in 2015. This weekend, 43 picks. Very Pac-12-ish to have its best draft in its last turn on the big stage, so to speak. It reflects the quality of play that we saw last season. A lot of good players, a lot of good teams. If that had happened a year earlier, there would still be a Pac-12 because the valuation of the schools in the conference would have been high enough for them to sign a media rights deal that would have satisfied everybody. But they were too late with that breakthrough season. And then this draft just kind of flows. This draft is the downstream result of that breakthrough season. So, you know, terrific, second only to the SEC. Other takeaway, 55% of the players picked. There were 255 or 260 players picked. 55% of them are from schools that will be in the SEC or the Big Ten next season. Another example of those two conferences dominating the sport, right? The playoff, the 14 playoff in January, all four teams will be in the SEC or Big Ten next season. Now we get more than half of the draft from those two conferences. Looking ahead, you have Colorado, Travis Hunter, cornerback, top 10 pick possibly. Shedeur Sanders could be the first quarterback off the board, him or Carson Beck from Georgia. A lot of Arizona is going to be well represented, right? I mean, Chet McMillan is viewed as a top 10, top 20 pick. Their offensive lineman, Jonah Savanea, potentially a first rounder. A lot of good players. What's interesting, though, is the transfer portal has screwed up so much. It's really hard to get a read on the rosters. The portal closes this week, but kids have many weeks to pick their schools. So we could end up with a first round pick from a school that's currently in the Pac-12 and is going to be in a different conference. That first round pick may not even be on the roster yet. And that, you know, so it's a little bit harder to project, but there's some real, Oregon's got a lot of guys, a lot of draftable players, and that's why they're a co-favorite with Ohio State to win the Big Ten.
I'll let you go off that. I will see you on Wednesday down here.
Looking forward to it.
I had a trouble until then, okay? See you later.
Thanks very much, Brad. Okay.
Don Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.